Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today. When you get a chance, check us out at consumerguide.com. While you're there, check out our 2024 Best Buy picks. The list is an excellent starting place if you're what?
I have no idea.
Looking for a new car or truck.
Got it.
All right.
You caught me daydreaming for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't ready. You don't usually like point to
yeah.
me.
Yeah, no, yeah. Yet. I shocked you.
You did.
Also, you can listen to back episodes of the podcast right there on our homepage, but you should probably just subscribe.
Well, yeah.
Speaking
probably.
Of subscribers, lots of new listeners last week.
Ah, welcome.
Welcome. I think what happened was I was mentioned on the Barron Streetwise podcast, and I think that we have some folks from there.
Ah.
So that is an excellent podcast, the Barron Streetwise podcast hosted by Jack Howe. If you know a little bit about business and you want to know more about business, that's your podcast.
Got it.
35 minutes a week. Absolutely worth it.
Okay.
All right. How are you, Jill?
I'm good.
All right. She is the Chief Outreach Officer and Sustainability Manager of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, and her freelance work can be found all over the internet. How are you?
Good. You've completely given up on my title, haven't
yes,
you?
Yes, I have.
Okay, got it.
Yes, I have. Jill, I don't know if you've noticed this, but my beverage is clear.
It looks like you're drinking water, Tom.
Yeah. Do you know why I'm drinking water?
Because you should?
No, because I suffer from my craft.
Okay.
I recorded a visit with the Nick D podcast with Nick DiGilio right before this.
Uh-huh.
And I mean right before this. I was at my house 20 minutes ago.
Okay.
And I didn't have time to stop at McDonald's.
Yeah, I actually beat you here.
Yeah.
I was very
that
surprised.
That never happens.
And, well, maybe once it, yeah. before it has happened. Yeah, but no, it does not happen.
You never get a star for punctuality.
I'm always on time.
I guess on time is good.
I have never been late. Isn't, that is punctual.
I guess so. I guess so. We made mistakes last week.
We did.
We made two big mistakes. I made one,
well,
you made one.
One big mistake that you made, and then one small, like, just mental fart that I made.
I'm pretty sure yours qualifies as bigger.
No, it doesn't.
But Sam informs me, Sam Fiorani of Auto Forecast Solutions, informs me that the Starlet was not, the Toyota Starlet that I was talking about, not available just in 84, but 1981 through 1984.
Okay.
All right. Now you.
Yes.
You made the tiny mistake.
Well, I called the Santa Fe 2025 model year, and it's 2024.
This surprises me, actually. Yes, it's a 2024. It's on sale now.
Right.
It surprises me that a 2024 is kind of being dealt with now. We're already late in the year.
Yeah, yeah. And I will say, all of my articles, my YouTube video, everything else says 2024, so that's why it was just a mental fart.
All right. All right. Can we say fart? Is that okay? No, all right.
So we've been beeping
a
fart.
Mental blip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying fart anyway.
All
I
right.
like the beep.
We have a lot to get to today. Later in the show, we're talking to Andrew Collins of The Drive
yes.
about recalls.
Yes.
So we need a recall primer, and there's a particular recall, an endless recall.
Yeah,
we'll talk about.
The never-ending recall.
Yeah.
I think there was a recall going on when I first started writing about cars 20 years ago, and it's still going on.
It's at least a decade,
yeah.
I think. Andrew will know, so we'll talk to him about that. Fisker. This is the third week we're mentioning Fisker and how Sam depressed me so much. But the news is even more depressing. Have
yes.
you seen this?
I've seen a lot of it, so I don't know specifically what you're referring to, but I've probably seen it.
Well, holy crap. Can we say crap? Is that? No?
No.
Okay, we can't say that.
Can we
cow.
Say shoot? No, we can't say shoot
right.
either. Sorry.
Yeah, we're definitely.
We're just going to have a bleeping
we're,
show today.
We're just pushing the boundaries today. But Fisker, half price sale.
Oh.
This is so sad. So
yeah.
they stopped building cars.
Yeah.
They sold about 5,000 cars. They have about 5,000 in inventory,
mm-hmm.
and they want that cash.
Right.
Even if they sell them at a loss at this point, it's money that they can get back. So they have cut the price of their cars by about 40%.
So if you're looking for a cheap EV...
I wouldn't do it.
No, I wouldn't either, because who's going to repair it?
Who's going to repair it? And then I think it was the folks at Consumer Reports. Someone was talking about the fact that they bought a Fisker.
Oh, I think it was Edmunds.
Edmunds bought
yeah.
a car, fullest price.
Yeah.
It's now worth 21 grand.
Yeah.
They bought a vehicle. So a Fisker, they bought an Ocean Extreme for about $62,000.
Yeah.
That price was reduced to $37,000.
Yeah.
And their used version ain't worth anything.
No. And you know, it's a little background there. A lot of publications will buy a vehicle as a long-term test. So, like, we don't get them for free. So my boss, Tim Esterdahl, will often buy a pickup truck. Well, you know, last year he had the Chevy Silverado 1500. Before that, he had the Toyota Tundra. Before that, he had the Ford F-150 hybrid. Paid for out of pocket by the publication, and then you try to sell it, hopefully not at a drastic loss.
Right. And I think that's even a consideration. Cars.com.
Yeah,
also
they do
does
that
this.
As well. So, like, a lot of publications do that because then they get the ownership experience, taking it to the dealer for oil changes or whatever it is you do at a dealership. and hopefully, you know, and I know Tim sold his Silverado, I think, at a 10K loss last year. But previously, like his Tundra and his F-150, he actually sold for a profit. So... this was the first year he sold a truck for a loss. But I think that in addition to, you know, the whole Fisker EV disaster, like prices in general are just coming down.
And Fisker, if you were going to write about a vehicle, that's a good one to do, mm-hmm. right? First year, you want to know what it's like. And, and they found out what it's like, and it's not good.
It's miserable.
What a depressing thing.
Yeah.
Henrik Fisker's a cool guy.
He is.
He's like a laid-back Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Without any evil tendencies. And you wanted this to work. But the price of the Sport, and how is Sport always the base trim level, went from $39,000 to $25,000. And it seems like a deal. Like, you can go out and buy an electric vehicle with almost 300 miles of range for $25,000. Don't do it. Because there are software issues. And when Fisker goes away, and it looks like Fisker's going to go away, no one can help you with your software problems.
Right. So, I mean,
this company is not going to be an ongoing concern.
No. So, I mean, I guess moneymaker, million-dollar idea, if somebody has $1 million, support for people who've bought the Fisker.
This happened, too, when Daewoo left the U.S. Well, one of the rules, it's actually a law that you're supposed to support a vehicle for 10 years after you built the last one.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are bankrupt and there is no company...
Yeah.
There's no one liable to do it.
There is no support.
Yeah. Yeah. If Chevy kills a model, no problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
All right.
You know, and to further that conversation, when General Motors did away with Saab, when they did away with...
Yeah, they're supporting Saab.
Pontiac, when they did away... You know...
Saturn.
They were still supporting those vehicles.
Oldsmobile.
Yeah.
The list of... brands that General Motors killed is endless.
Yes.
We can also throw Plymouth on that list if we wanted to, but that wasn't General Motors.
Right.
All right. Driving stick. You basically made fun of me last week and said I was going to stall out. I'm driving the 2024 Mustang GT with the performance pack.
Yes.
Performance exhaust. The god-awful Recaro seats. And that's god-awful for me.
You would
love them.
No, I wouldn't, because they're too big for me. So the unadjustable, very average-sized man seats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some dude is like a normal height, 175 pounds.
Yeah.
Some normal weirdo.
They're for that guy.
Yeah, that horrible weirdo.
Yeah.
The Mustang GT is a delight.
Yes.
Everything about it's a delight. It's really way too loud. This is definitely a young man's car, and I'm not totally digging driving this.
And you're not young is what I'm hearing you
say.
I'm
not young and I'm not small, but I appreciate what this car is, and this car is awesome.
Yeah.
And as for the fact that I haven't driven stick in 18 months, I did have a couple of really weird, you know, new drivers. Yes.
Yeah.
Those launchy, those weird starts. But there's no way you're going to stall out this engine. You know, 400 pound-feet of torque, it's not going to stall out.
Okay.
However, I did once, backing out of a parking lot.
Okay.
So I did stall out once,
but
I wasn't going forward.
Only one shot that we have to do, and the drinking game of Tom stalling the car.
Yeah, but what a lovely car. The Bang & Olufsen stereo is great. The shifter is great. The power is great.
Yeah.
The exhaust noise is incredibly obnoxious, and even if you turn it down to the lowest setting, I think you piss off neighbors. But
So I had the opportunity to drive that at the North American Car of the Year fall drives last year.
Last year, yeah.
And it was really, really pleasant. I drove it back-to-back with the six-cylinder engine.
Mm-hmm.
And the six-cylinder was really pleasant, but here's the thing. It only comes in an automatic.
Right.
Wah-wah.
Yeah. No, manuals are disappearing in a hurry.
Yeah.
There are two manuals for this. There's the one that I drove, and then there's a Tremec version. And you have to be a serious gearhead to care. That comes in the, what do they call it, the dark horse?
Yeah, the dark horse.
Which gets you 20 more horsepower.
Yeah, also lovely.
So anyway, nice car.
Yes.
Great car. I'll be running a review of that. It is exactly what it should be.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Ford nailed it. So that's that story. New York Auto Show.
It happened.
In New York.
Or is happening.
Yeah, that's in New York, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So. The last I heard, it was in New York. I don't think they moved it to Boston yet.
They should have just called it the Hyundai Kia Show.
Right.
Because it was just launches from Genesis.
Yeah.
Hyundai's luxury brand. Genesis, yeah. Hyundai and Kia.
Yeah. And I mean, before the show started, Nissan had a couple of reveals that they did offsite. And then those vehicles, the first public viewing of those vehicles were at the show.
I'm worried about the Kicks.
Why?
So the Kicks, one of the triumvirate of three cheap Nissans that are incredible values, the Kicks, yep. The Versa, and the Sentra,
yeah,
isn't going to be so cheap anymore.
Well, I don't think the all-wheel drive version is going to be cheap, but I still think they're going to have a base version that will be under $25,000.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Because the Kicks is awesome.
I just swapped out of the Nissan Versa, and loved it. I did a review. I've got it posted on YouTube, on my YouTube,
yeah,
Jill Simonella. And the car du jour. And the vehicle I had was SR trim, all in, $22,000.
Yeah.
And I remember when I drove the Kicks several years ago. It's been a while since I've driven it, but I loved it. Like the price, the quality, the what you get, it's amazing.
And it's a new car,
yeah,
for $22,000,
yeah,
which is nice.
Yeah, with automatic reverse braking, which some people seem to need. I'm not going to name names, but somebody in my family recently backed into something, it wasn't me.
I had that on a test vehicle recently, and I don't know what the deal was, and I don't know if the sensor needed to be cleaned. It just kept slamming on the brakes every time I threw it in reverse.
I think some of the automatic reverse braking, they brake at shadows.
Maybe.
I feel like I had a Lexus TX maybe that, like, when I was backing into my garage, it would just randomly slam on the brakes, and I think it had to have been a shadow.
I don't know what the problem was, and since I don't know exactly what the problem is, I'm not going to talk about the car yet specifically, okay. but that was a problem. But that was the Kicks was released.
Me, I'm going to throw everybody under the bus.
Yeah. Kicks was revealed in advance of the auto.
Yes,
show.
Yeah. So it was the Infiniti QX80.
Which is the big... The big dog,
the big
truck.
Yes, the big
so
dog.
So they're going after the Escalade again.
Yep.
I don't care.
okay. Tell me how you really feel. I didn't get that.
I don't know. Going after Escalade and going after the big GM pickup or big GM SUVs seems like folly.
But, you know, I give Infiniti a lot of crap. And I'm saying that word again, which maybe I shouldn't be. But I'm saying it again. I give them a lot of crap because I feel like they look a lot like Nissans, which, okay, they're owned by Nissan.
But that's now the plan.
But I think this new Infiniti QX80 looks much more high-end and much more high-level than what the Nissan Armada currently does.
Yeah,
now, we haven't seen the new Armada.
The new Armada is going to look like this.
But it better not. At least not with the electronics and the interior.
But it will.
No.
All right.
No, I'm hoping that they will differentiate.
And in defense of Infiniti, the new QX60 is very good.
I don't think so.
No, really? I think it's an excellent three-row crossover.
I think it's an excellent two-row crossover, but the third row is horrible.
Point taken. All right, so that stuff happened in advance of the show.
Yes.
At the show, big news from Hyundai. They showed freshened versions of the Tucson.
Yes.
And the Santa Cruz. The Santa Cruz being the Tucson-based small pickup.
Correct.
The news there, it's mostly design freshening and then XRT version of the Santa Cruz. XRT is their off-road based vehicle.
Yeah.
Or off-road themed. It's not the world's most serious off-road package, but it's something.
Yeah. And what I want to say is I'm totally taking credit for everything new that they did to the XRT.
I knew you would do that. I can just cross it off. Jill takes credit.
Yep. No. Well, so with the XRT model, what they did is they put a new front bumper on so that you have a different approach angle. And
explain that.
Well, so like when you're off-roading and you're like approaching a hill or something, like you
or a big ass rock.
A big ass.
Can
rock.
I say big ass?
No. No. No, you can't. That's another beep.
Yeah.
With the Swear Forward podcast today. So when you're approaching something and you want to get over it, like if you have low ground clearance, if you have a bumper that sticks down too far, you're going to nick things up a lot.
When Range Rover came to the U.S. in the 80s,
uh-huh.
when they brought over the Range Rover, they'd been bringing over Land Rovers for a while, but the Range Rover is the big expensive mm-hmm. vehicle. If you look at that particular vehicle, especially in profile, you see what they did. The bumpers are relatively narrow and high up, mm-hmm. and there's a definite angle to the sheet metal to allow for that.
Yeah.
And it's very pronounced front and rear.
Yeah.
And that is entirely for sliding over big stuff.
Yeah.
And so that you've got that angle, it allows you to take off at a crazy angle as you're heading mm-hmm. up, but it also helps you with the breakover height too. So a lot going on there.
Yeah, and I think the new XRT has increased ride height. It has bigger tires, all-terrain tires, and it has tow hooks.
The thing about the tires too, I've noticed that, and this was true of the Ford Explorer Timberline, mm-hmm. Often the tires are bigger, but the wheels aren't. They tend to be 18-inch wheels because there's so much sidewall on the tires, and that's mm-hmm. to allow for off-roading. But the net effect of that is the ride tends to be pretty good.
Yeah.
I've noticed that vehicles that are off-roady often have a better ride quality.
Yeah. And I guess I should say the reason why I'm taking credit for the XRT is because I did Off-Road Rebel Rally, the navigational challenge in the Santa Cruz. And a lot of the lessons learned from what we experienced in the vehicle and what we broke on the vehicle is what they, I think, ended up changing and doing to
the vehicle. I heard you were in a Noggles parking lot and tried to drive over a lane divider and got stuck.
Well, yeah.
So that's the approach angle.
Yeah, that's the approach angle.
No, okay.
I feel like there were some really good lessons learned there. And I think the new XRT version is pretty cool.
It is. XRT is going to show up on every vehicle in their lineup at some point.
Yep.
So, every crossover.
Yep.
So, XRT, not to be confused with Chicago's classic rock station.
No.
WXRT.
Right.
Which is known as just XRT.
Yes.
Been around forever. Beloved.
That is true.
Beloved.
Tucson.
Yep. I thought we sort of skipped over that.
Yeah,
freshened exterior, interior.
Lots of new technology.
And the XRT package is updated.
Yes. And I will say both the Santa Cruz and the Tucson get wireless Apple CarPlay. This is a big deal because previously you could only get wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto in their base infotainment system and not their up-level infotainment system. And so now in their 12.3-inch screen with their up-level infotainment system, you get wireless Apple CarPlay. It has digital key. Both of the vehicles get digital key. So you can use your phone as a key fob or your Apple Watch as a key fob.
Do you have any sense if people are doing that? Because Lincoln rolled that out 5 years ago.
And yeah.
I don't think people are doing it.
I would 100% do it.
Uh-huh.
Especially on my Apple Watch, I would 100% do it.
So what's involved? You just download the app, right?
Yeah.
That's it.
And then previously, so the old digital key that you would have with Hyundai vehicles, you would have to take your phone and actually touch it to the chiclet on the door.
Weird.
Near field communication. So, that is what it would do to open the door. But now it's, what is it? It's wide range Bluetooth. I think I got that right. Technology. So essentially your phone acts like the key fob. And as you walk up to the door, it'll unlock.
Oh, I guess it has to be Bluetooth because it can't be RF because it's your phone. Your phone doesn't have an RF, which is standard radio. That's what your key fob uses.
Yeah.
All right. We got to get through this real quick. Genesis, two weird things.
Weird.
well, because they launched a new high performance brand at the auto show, and they named it Magma.
Okay. I was just like,
and the cars are all orange, but the car they showed mostly was the Genesis GV60 Magma concept.
Right.
GV60, a delightful little electric vehicle. This has got fat tires, really fat fenders. It's lowered. This Magma color is absolutely to be seen. They're not going to stick you with just Magma. There'll be other color options. Also, they didn't name this color Magma. They just happened to make this car, this wonderful flaming orange. So that's coming out. That vehicle should be out soon. And then, I don't even know how to pronounce this, the Genesis Neolune concept.
Yeah.
But it is a larger three-row crossover concept.
Right.
That seems to be something. It's something they're going to build. And it's actually, we're going to talk about this car later. It's going to be based on the mechanicals from the Kia EV9.
Yes.
Which you drove here.
Yes, I did drive here in.
Yeah. Do you know what the color blue is? Because that's a great color.
I don't know. You know what? I will look it up
over
break.
We have a commercial break.
Tell you when we get back.
Yeah, so Genesis making some news. I kind of thought Genesis wasn't going to go the performance route, but it looks like they are. So they're going to do a performance version of every vehicle in their lineup.
Okay.
So there you have it. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we talk to Andrew Collins of The Drive.
Oh, by the way, I have the key fob for the EV9, and it's Ocean Blue.
That's a lame name for a good color.
Lame name for a good color, yes.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She's Jill. Jill, help me out here.
Why would I want to do that?
So that we can expedite the show.
Oh, okay. Hey, Tom, you're on social media, right?
I am, Jill. Thanks for asking. Car Guy Tom on Twitter.
Okay. That's or
it.
X.
On X. Yeah. Whichever it is. Follow me there. I like to do stuff with the Car Spotter hashtag. Mm-hmm. Over the weekend, I found an array of 5 separate custom vans. Custom vans. A phenomenon that literally dates back to the 70s.
Okay.
And then it became weird family haulers. And I don't know, but custom vans are still out there. I don't think anyone builds them anymore. So they're all just collectible now. Or not.
Mm.
I don't think.
Or not. Right.
All right. So we've been talking a lot about recalls lately.
Yes.
And there have been some big ones.
Yeah.
And there's a particular recall, the Takata airbag recall.
Yeah.
Which has been a plague upon us because we have to keep talking about it.
Yeah.
But we do have to keep talking about it. But you just want it to go away. And additionally, I think we need to just talk about the nature of recalls in general.
I would agree.
So we have joining us today, Andrew Collins of The Drive. Andrew, how are you?
Hi, I'm well. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, it's Monday.
Yeah,
sorry.
We're having you. You're joining us. I'll get this straight. We were swearing earlier, and we weren't supposed to, so this show's already completely off the air. Off the rails.
we're very bleeped today.
You are executive editor over there. Tell us about The Drive and what you do there.
Yeah. Well, The Drive is the chronicle of car culture. We cover automotive industry news, product releases, cool stuff that people are doing in the car world. And as executive editor, I cover news, I edit people, and I help kind of steer the direction of the site.
All right. As a car culture question, and this isn't a quiz and I'm not testing you, I'm just throwing it out there. Have you guys yet covered the LaForza?
Probably at some point. Okay. I would have to dig back into the archives. That car doesn't come up too often.
I mention it because I drive around particularly to look for old cars to take pictures of. And there is a lot near my house where there is a parked, abandoned LaForza. And for people who do not remember this vehicle, it was Italian designed.
Mm-hmm.
Really good-looking interior, but it was based on Ford Bronco, U.S. Ford Bronco mechanicals, 5-liter V8. It was kind of a hodgepodge of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They sold them here in very small numbers, and if you see one, consider yourself very lucky.
Okay.
Little piece of
history. Go buy a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
And if you have to repair one, consider yourself very unlucky.
Right.
Unless it's the engine. You can do the engine.
Right, yeah.
If you got to fix a body panel, you are so screwed. So, Andrew, we're talking recalls today, and for people who don't know, let us know exactly what a recall is, because it's an action that is taken because something is wrong with a vehicle, but there are different kinds of recalls, right? A manufacturer can decide to do a recall, or the government can force a manufacturer's hands and make them execute a recall.
Yeah, that's right. You're talking about basically a voluntary versus mandatory.
Yeah.
From a practical perspective, I think the real difference is how well a company is able to lobby the government and couch the language to be voluntary. Typically, there's something safety-related or something significant enough that enough consumers complain that something needs to be addressed, and then a recall gets issued. And it's not that easy to happen because, obviously, recall costs an automaker a lot of money, and the car biz is one of great scale. So, they want to avoid a recall at all costs. Basically.
Yeah, and we've seen this interesting thing, too, with over-the-air updates. And Tesla has famously been able to skirt physical recalls by making changes over the air. And I think to date, have they ever been forced to actually do a full physical, you have to bring your car someplace rebate?
I'm not 100% sure. There might have been something with suspension at one point.
Okay.
But the over-the-air update is a huge advantage of a modern car in the sense that, much like your phone or your computer, so much of it is computerized now that, it can be updated basically over the internet. Some issues that in the past, you would have had to physically bring a car in, you don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah, that's super handy. So we were talking, and Jill and I have been talking about this both on and off air, and you just heard us whine about it. the Takata airbag recall,
yeah,
is legendary in that it will not go away. And for people who don't know, and if you don't have a Japanese car, you might not be involved in this at all. But this seemed to overly involve Honda and I think Toyota. But tell us about the Takata airbag story and why that's news now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the Takata saga has actually been going on. You could trace it back to 2001, believe it or not.
I was right.
You were right.
Yep. I think Isuzu was the first one to have an issue there.
Wow.
Not even just Japanese. BMW, some American cars as well have been plagued by this. It's so basically what happened was with the Takata recall, kind of the big one that ultimately bankrupted the company was part of the airbag inflator was susceptible to heat and humidity. So vehicles that, you know, Florida and anywhere else where the car gets hot, which is pretty much everywhere in America.
Yeah.
It was causing these airbags to basically rupture incorrectly. So instead of giving you an inflatable pillow like you're meant to, it would shoot shrapnel, which is obviously
not
worst
what you're
case
expecting.
Scenario.
Not what you're hoping for, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so kind of the reason it's in the news again is, Ford in particular, I'm not sure if other automakers were involved as well, but Ford repaired some vehicles and are now having to re-repair some cars because they were not fixed properly the first time, which is just like total nightmare scenario from a consumer perspective.
And I thought there was a wave of this, Andrew, correct me if I'm wrong, there was a wave of this earlier where the old airbags, which may have experienced some of the corrosion that would make the shrapnel, create the shrapnel situation, were actually replaced with similar airbags because no one had a fix yet.
Yeah.
And so they were literally being recalled with the promise of recalling them again later.
Yeah, that is something that happened early on. It was just like, I think a lot of these automakers were struggling to get the parts. I mean, it's not a common kind of part that a dealer would have on the shelf because typically if you're repairing airbags, I mean, the car is pretty much toast. But even if it were, like, you know, you wouldn't want the part that was on the shelf because that's probably malfunctioning as well.
No.
You know, to some of these automakers' credit, like, I actually have a 1998 Mitsubishi, ancient car, and it took them a while, but they did ultimately get a fix for it. So, like, they were working pretty hard, and like I said earlier, it ultimately bankrupted Takata because it cost so much that there was over about 67 million cars ultimately that were affected by that. Huge.
So, I mean, what is the fix? You know, obviously you can't go back to Takata and say, "Hey, fix the problem." So, did they find like another automaker who could, or automaker supplier that could do the airbag and fit it in the space that the old Takata airbag was in, or like or was it just like, I think I know a fix for it. I'm just going to put a pin here and it'll be fine. Like, what was the fix?
You know, I think ultimately it ended up being partially subsidized by the OEMs. I think every car company is a little bit differently. And they kept the Takata afloat long enough to figure
that's
out.
That's what I recall.
You know, it's funny you mention other brands because, like, another nightmare that's coming up is there's yet another airbag company called ARC, American company, that's also starting to have, have a full recall yet. But, I know, it's horrifying. They're having big issues. The NHTSA did a long investigation on them as well, and there's currently a lot of pushback because a lot of the automakers don't think there's sufficient evidence for a full recall, but General Motors has recalled quite a few vehicles with these ARC airbags. It's another like crop of tens of millions of cars that the government is looking at, and definitely something you're going to want to pay attention to. Honestly, no matter what you drive, I mean, some of the cars affected are ancient. I'm talking like old Saabs and Saturns are on the list. And
So if you own a car, it's probably going to be recalled.
I know, honestly. Yeah, it's a fortunate situation. Really, as a consumer, the best thing you can do is just keep checking. The NHTSA has you can plug your VIN in your 17-digit vehicle identification number, and it'll tell you if anything's currently due. But it's tough. It's a scary spot.
Andrew, is there a statute of limitations, per se, on how long a manufacturer has to keep something like a safety system active? Because we're talking about cars now that are 25 years old. At some point, is it just okay to put a Post-it note in the steering wheel and say, "May eject shrapnel," and that's all you need to know?
I mean, honestly, I would have thought so. I was quite surprised that they still went for it on my 98 car for the reason you just stated. I mean, some of these brands aren't even in business. I mean, Saab isn't even selling cars anymore. So it's like, it's weird that, but apparently not as far as the rules go. No, it can go back as far as they think there's an actual viable problem.
So what does the Ford recall right now have to do with Takata? Do they have a fix in place and are people being notified?
Yeah, so the Ford one, yes, people are being notified.
Okay.
The fix is kind of TBD. So this is one of those deals where they fixed them, and then and now they're getting reports that it was not fixed correctly or it was fixed with the wrong piece. And so people are, you just got to wait and see what when Ford's got an actual solution for it. But, yeah, that's kind of, it's like you have to bring your car in a second time and then hope that the second fix is correct.
Now, there are laws in place that prevent a dealer from a new car dealer or a franchise dealer from selling a used car that doesn't have recalls acted on, correct?
Yeah, there are. I'm not sure every state is the same, but for sure, at least some states.
Oh, it's by state.
Don't let a dealer sell a car. Yeah, it's definitely going to be state by state.
But
there are definitely some rules in place that at least a new car dealer, a reputable dealer, would not be allowed to sell a car with an open recall.
So question for you, and I talk a lot about just current recalls on another radio show, and one of the questions that comes up all the time is that you talk about a recall, manufacturer will make the recall known, and then they say they won't notify people for like another 30 or 60 days. Why the long delay after announcement? Are they waiting to come up with a fix, or are they waiting to schedule people?
Well, I think there's kind of a couple of factors there. I mean, parts availability is going to be one. Like I said, I mean, there's parts aren't that easy to get. And, I mean, kind of the cold reality is I think they're just trying to stretch it out as long as possible. I mean, especially when you're talking about some of these old cars, like if you got a recall out for some, you know, late 90s car, you're just hoping a few more of those are junked in the time that that the recall gets people. So I think that's honestly, they're just going to try to drag their feet as much as possible. It's like, you know, when your mom tells you to clean your room,
right,
that's like the government telling these companies to get people's cars fixed. Like, are you going to hop to it, or are you going to drag your feet a little bit and then do it begrudgingly? That's kind of what you're working with there.
10 years ago or so, 15 years ago, there was a recall on Jeep Grand Cherokees. And the recall, I think, had to do with steering gear, but it might have been rear suspension, but it had something to do with suspension or steering. And for whatever reason, which would have been, I think, Daimler Chrysler at the time, didn't take this very seriously. And they got busted by the government for dragging their feet on this and having a really low conversion rate. And I think part of the problem is that the vehicles were getting old and people didn't care. And owners, you know, they're trying to track down fourth owners at that point.
Right.
Has that changed? We see manufacturers, I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, getting ahead of these things right now as opposed to dragging their feet on them. And I think that part of this was a result of the insane General Motors key problem. And I thought that after that, everyone kind of freaked out and took recalls more seriously.
I think so, too. Well, there's two parts to answer that. I think yes and no. So the yes factor... like I had a 06 Honda, which is a pretty old car too, that had a recall, airbag recall, and I got a lot of letters from Honda about that. And I'm like the fourth or fifth owner. Honda was very aggressive about insisting I bring my car in to be repaired, which I did do ultimately. but you know, the flip side is we're seeing more recalls than ever lately. It's just going up and up and up. And I mean, not to be overly dramatic, but this makes me feel like these automakers are more thinking about the shareholders, the customer, versus the person buying the car, which is frustrating to me as a car enthusiast. It's like they're just, you know, doing whatever they can to cut costs, and it's very frustrating to see.
Now, if you're a dealer, if you're an independent dealer, recalls are kind of good news for you, right? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe dealers are paid their regular book rate to fix these recalls.
Yeah, but the dealers are paid by the automaker. I don't know if it's particularly like a good amount of money for the time.
Okay.
If a dealer is smart, they'll take that opportunity to be like, hey, and you also need tires and brake pads.
Right.
And that kind of stuff. So in that sense, it's definitely, I mean, honestly, anytime a dealer can get you into the service bay, that's a lead. That's a good opportunity for them. But, you know, at the same time, you're dealing with disgruntled customers. And so it's kind of a
two-edged
sword there, too.
Yeah, inconvenience customers. Any big recalls we're looking at right now?
Well, the one we're just discussing is kind of the scariest for sure. Subaru's got an airbag one as well with, I'm not sure which airbag manufacturer it is, but that's an issue with the passenger side seat where it's not detecting there's an occupant. And yeah, they just recalled about 118,000 cars for that reason. Like the passenger airbag wouldn't go off. So there's another one.
Well, I have to tell you, so when I first started writing about cars and passenger airbags were new, I weigh about 95 pounds and I would sit in the front passenger seat of cars and it would not detect me.
I had the opposite problem with early Toyota test cars. And by early, I mean the ones I drove early, where my backpack would indicate that someone was sitting in that seat. And the car wanted me to buckle up my backpack.
You're like, no, I'm good.
Funny. We tested a Toyota GR86 not that long ago, a little sports car. And I had my dog in one of those tiny back seats. And like as she would move, the seatbelt alarm would go off.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, Andrew, talking about recalls, do you guys cover them at The Drive? Where should people look for more information?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thedrive.com. We got a big news column. Anytime there's big recalls, we're definitely talking about it and trying to get you the info you can use, right?
All right, tell us where that is again.
It's thedrive.com. That's basically the homepage is going to have news and reviews all right up front and center for you.
Awesome. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, man. Really appreciate it. And Jill, you as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. That was Andrew Collins of The Drive. We're talking rebates. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, an interesting twist on the quiz.
Uh-huh.
Stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. It's April 1st.
It is April 1st.
Happy April Fool's Day.
Yes.
Why don't you fool us with some social media stuff first?
fool you with some social media stuff. So I am on social media. I'm on all of the things. So YouTube, LinkedIn.
Seriously, you're not kidding.
All the
this
things.
This isn't a trick.
Instagram posts, threads, Twitter or X, as you like to call it.
After you say post, I want you to say Kellogg's.
Kellogg's post.
That would be a great social media site.
Kellogg's?
Yeah.
That's it. It's a business school in Chicago.
The Kellogg School of Business?
Yeah. So I'm on all the things.
Good school.
At Jill Simonello. My name, all one word, and that's with a C, not an S. And in case you can't spell Simonello, which most people can't, you can just search for the hashtag.
I don't know if it ever would have occurred to me to spell it with an S.
Oh, believe me.
Yeah?
Yes. I get S. I'll go up and I'll say Jill Simonello, and they're always looking at the bottom of the list. And I'm like, that's with a C. And you can automatically see their eyes move up.
When I was a younger man, everyone always pronounced my name Apple.
Yep.
And that just went away. Like, no one has done that in 30 years.
I still hear people call you Tom Apple.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Weird. Who are you talking to?
No, I can't tell you.
Oh, weird.
The sources shall not be revealed.
Wow, that's weird. Mm-hmm. But they don't know me because they don't. Yeah.
Well, and some people, I will say, do it as a joke.
Okay.
Yeah, well, they're making fun of you.
It's good. Well, who doesn't?
I don't.
Speaking of making fun of me.
Or at least I try not to.
You
yes.
are quizzing me today.
Yes, so as a part of our April Fool's
like
joke,
a Sadie Hawkins thing.
Yes.
An April Fool.
I did the quiz.
All right.
All right.
Right.
And I think I did okay.
Same rules.
If you are a first-time follower, the idea is I'm quizzing Tom. He has to get 6. Plus
the bonus question.
So he has to get 3 correct, and then he has, like, if he doesn't get 3 correct, he has one more opportunity.
I tell you, I'm going to rate this quiz, as I am the official quizzer, based entirely on how random the bonus question is.
It is both random and not random.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to this.
If you had to guess about the bonus question, what do you think it would be about?
Ancient European currencies.
Okay. Yeah, you are not right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, because I had drachma in my head as an answer.
Oh, yeah, which is Greek currency, former Greek currency, yeah.
And shekel.
Yep. I don't remember what that one is.
Don't worry about it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so the theme for the quiz, is it a real feature? Did it really exist?
Okay.
Or was it an April Fool's joke?
Oh, this is great.
Yeah, see? Yeah. I think I'm pretty pleased with myself.
By the way, my hat's off to our colleague Paul Strauss, who today came up with a fake.
Actually, I have the backstory on that.
Oh, it's very funny. But he came up with a fake auto. He lives in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful house. I've seen pictures of it. But there's just not a lot of automotive media down
there. No, and so it was him and Tim Esterdahl, my boss, who lives in Nebraska. And they created, was it America Heartland's Automotive Association?
Yeah.
Aha.
Very funny.
But the genesis of this was actually our friend Kurt McAllister at Toyota.
Okay.
Approached them and asked them to do this.
Oh, very funny.
Yes.
Kurt's a good guy. Hats off to Kurt. Kurt listens to the podcast.
Yes, he does. So
yeah.
Thank you for a laugh today, Kurt.
We apologize for all the swearing.
No, we don't.
I do.
Okay, Tom does. I don't.
Yeah.
All right. So is it real or is it an April Fool's joke? Okay. So question number one.
Uh-huh.
So we've seen the evolution of music in cars from cassette players to MP3 players to audio apps.
Uh-huh.
But would you believe that Chrysler was actually a pioneer in the car audio system arena and installed a record player in several of its 1956 models?
Yes, and I thought it was DeSoto first, but that's absolutely real. And I believe they were dedicated records. Like they had to be, they weren't 45s.
Mm-mm.
They were specifically for this. And I think they got, I'm going to swear again, the crap scratched out of them. I don't think the system worked well at all.
You are correct on both accounts.
It's real.
So Chrysler Hi-Fi record player is what they called it. In a major milestone in the evolution of car audio systems, Chrysler unveiled a custom record player in several of its 1956 models. The intention was pure, the execution muddled. Despite working well in high-end models, poor suspension systems and lower-tier vehicles caused records to skip. Additionally, Highway Hi-Fi could play on only proprietary 7-inch records, forcing owners to go out and repurchase albums just to play in their car.
Yeah, the thing about that, too, well, people did that with cassettes.
Mm-hmm.
Cassettes were really a thing that people bought for the car.
Mm-hmm.
Or there was the mobility. But Frank Piler, one of the founders of Consumer Guide, I believe had driven a car with the, what is it called, Highway?
Hi-Fi.
Highway Hi-Fi?
Yep.
Yeah.
Hi-Fi.
But the fidelity was poor. Also, if you drove a CD player in the mid-90s and you had like a 6-CD player in the trunk, skipped like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Yeah. So, you have a point.
Oh, yay.
Woo!
Okay.
All right. Question number two.
Uh-huh.
We are all familiar with a cool box in the console area of some Land Rover and Lexus vehicles.
I'll say I am.
But would you believe
that
Toyota actually put an ice maker in its 1984 van?
84 van for the U.S.?
Yes.
Man, I don't think so. That van was weird. That was part of the city van craze that came over from 84. Was Toyota selling a van here in 84?
And it was called Van.
It was called Van, yeah. It was the Toyota van. Nissan also sold a vehicle that I think was called the Nissan Wagon. And it was just basically the same, like very short wheelbase. They were driving around Tokyo and really small crowded cities, or very large crowded cities. I'm going to say no.
You are incorrect.
There was one?
Toyota Van Ice Maker. It's fair to say this vehicle was not the most thought out model Toyota ever produced. The company did, after all, name it Van. Then there was the optional feature available in the LE trim, a shoebox-sized freezer. The compartment was cooled by air conditioning lines and came equipped with ice trays. The strange feature was surely a hit at tailgate parties.
Huh.
But otherwise, we're not entirely clear why anyone would need it.
Crazy thing about that van, too, it was mid-engine. The engine was between the driver and the passenger because they're so short. They were trying to keep them short for turnability, maneuverability. All right, I'm 1-1.
You only have 1 point.
Whoops.
Okay. Number three. We know how much Italians like their espresso.
Heard of it.
So, would you believe, in an attempt to caffeinate their owners more easily on their morning commute, Fiat offered an optional espresso coffee machine in its 2013 500L.
I wrote about this, so yes, it's true.
It is true.
Yeah.
It is true.
That was one of our most popular articles for a very long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was good looking. The equipment looked good.
Mm-hmm.
In an Italian sort of stylish way.
In an attempt to make the morning commute less chaotic and more caffeinated, Fiat offered an optional espresso coffee maker in its 2013 500L model. The machine, developed in tandem with Italy's Lavazza coffee company, was fully integrated into the passenger's dashboard. It even came with accessories, including spoons and sugar holders, For safety and practical reasons, the machine worked only when the car was off. For safety and practical reasons, the machine is no longer available. In fact, the 500L was discontinued.
I want to go back to something for just a second.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the Toyota Previa?
Yes.
It was a minivan-looking minivan that mm-hmm. was based on the Toyota van,
mm-hmm.
but still had the engine between the seats.
Mm-hmm.
So they couldn't get a bigger engine in there, like a V6, so they had to supercharge the engine. So people who really know about crazy Toyota weirdness will look around for a Previa that says SC on the back. Supercharged. They're rare and kind of sought after.
All right. So,
just another shout-out to Kurt McAllister.
Yeah. So you have 2 points.
I have 2 points.
Okay.
And what, 3 more opportunities?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Question number 4.
Yeah.
We know how much the Brits love and hate and just generally are obsessed with the royals.
Yes.
So, would you believe that BMW created the Royal Edition of the BMW M3 available in regal red, bridal white, and imperial blue in 2011? To celebrate the wedding of Prince William and Kate Middleton.
So many details there, it feels like it has to be true, but my soul needs it to not be true. No, fake.
You are correct.
Oh, thank God.
So this is actually kind of funny because, and I printed out a copy of it, BMW actually placed ads in United Kingdom papers advertising this model. And the ad copy says, to celebrate the forthcoming wedding of His Royal Highness Prince William of Wales and Miss Catherine Middleton, a very special royal edition of the BMW M3 couple will be available at BMW dealerships throughout the country from today. And for this month only, the Majestic Royal Edition is available in 3 colors, spelled with a U. Regal, red, bridal white, and imperial blue. It is resplendently upholstered in Windsor white Dakota leather and adorned with our commemorative Will, W-I-L-L, emblem. For more information, call 800-777-120 or contact Pauline Your Leg at BMW.
Very good. BMW did an ad once in the 80s, and I think it showed up in all the major books, all the major buff books, for a convertible that you didn't need to put the top up on the rain.
Yes.
Yeah, very funny.
I was going to select that one as one of my things.
I remember that there were schematics and text for it, specs for it, that were pretty detailed. I remember reading it. I was a much younger man, and I'm like, no. Like, I didn't know they did the April Fool's thing.
Right.
But I'm like, this can't be. And I kept rereading it.
Well, do you remember the Mini April Fool's with 2 reverse gears?
No.
Oh, I should have done that one.
No, I could stall them out both.
Yeah. 2 times.
All right.
Okay, question 5. Throughout the years, there have been several safety innovations that try to mitigate and reduce damage to vehicles and injury to people. I mean, airbags. We were just talking about those.
I've
airbags.
Heard of them, yeah.
So, would you believe that in 1970, a Chicago-based company developed and installed water bumpers on taxis in some major cities?
Wow. Because the barriers, today, those barrels that you'll see on the road, by those are filled with water.
Or sand.
Water in bumpers. I'm going to say no, because it doesn't seem like you can get enough water there to have an impact or avoid an impact.
But I'm pumped.
To lessen an impact. I'm going to say no, fake.
You are incorrect.
Really? Wow.
So, water bumpers. Water balloon bumper sounds like something out of a Moe, Larry, and Curly skit. But believe it or not, these safety devices were real and nearly made their way into commercially available vehicles. The idea behind hydro cushion cells, as they were known, was simple. The water could absorb the force of a collision and redirect that energy by shooting through vinyl water chambers behind the bumper's metal facing.
That's actually interesting and more tech than I thought.
Yeah. And when they did studies, it proved that, like, there was 50% less damage done, like, when accidents happen.
That's actually how a shock absorber works.
Yeah.
You're just moving the energy. But interesting. Very interesting. Didn't know that.
Sounds like
it would be heavy.
Yes. And that was part of the problem is, one, it was heavy, and two, they would freeze.
Oh, I didn't think about freezing.
They would freeze.
So wow. I'm trying to look at this logically, and I did think about something obvious. Chicago.
Yeah.
Freezing.
Freezing. Yeah. So I have to give a shout out to AAA story that by Andrew Sheldon.
Good quiz.
For giving me these weird features in
All
cars.
Right.
So bonus question.
Yeah.
You did get three.
All right.
So the bonus question is this. So you have already won.
Yeah. Ancient European currencies.
All right. So I have two bonus questions. Which one am I going to choose? Okay. I'll do the first one.
All right.
According to Runa.com, Usain Bolt, the fastest man in the world, ate an insane number of chicken nuggets during the 2008 Beijing Olympics. That insane number was A, 500 chicken nuggets, B, 1,000 chicken nuggets, C, 1,500 chicken nuggets, or D, 2,000 chicken nuggets.
Over the course of the Olympics? Obviously, that wasn't in one sitting.
Yes.
Yeah, because you need a lot of honey mustard. Was it 5,000, 1,500?
No, 500, 1,000, 1,500, 2,000.
1,000.
Well done.
Thank you.
Well done.
That was a stab in the dark.
Yeah, so my other question, because I'm just going to give it to you anyway.
It was how soon afterwards did he die?
Yeah, no, he didn't die. So back to Runa.com.
Uh-huh.
The oldest person to complete a marathon was Fauja Singh, who completed a marathon in Toronto in 2011. How old was he? A, 80, B, 93, C, 100, or D, 101?
93.
100.
Jeez.
I know.
No, good for that guy.
So I should have given you
that
question.
And you know what question. He did afterwards? He ate McNuggets.
I was going to say he died. No.
He ate McNuggets and then he died.
So well done. You won the quiz.
Thank you. Thank you. We only have a couple minutes, but you drove a very interesting vehicle here, and I think an important vehicle.
Yeah. So I drove the Kia EV9, and I had it. This is actually the third time I've been behind the wheel. I drove it for a North American Car of the Year special drive.
Yeah, we should say this
fall.
Is a large crossover.
Large crossover electric
three-row
vehicle.
Big thing.
And then I had it again for like a two-day test in the winter, and then I just now had it for a full week, so I turn it in tomorrow. And so I was like, all right, what can I do with this vehicle that I haven't already done? And that is, I drove to Indianapolis, which is, you know, from my house to my mom's house, it's 196 miles, and I have a real problem trying to get there without stopping
right
to charge.
And part of the reason is you drive faster than 75.
Well, not when I'm driving an EV. I usually set the cruise control
too
at the speed limit.
Oh, I set it, I think it's 75, sometimes 70.
I set it at...
Wildly
yeah
extends your range.
Well, so the here's the problem. You have about 100 miles between, like on I-65 between Chicago and Indianapolis that is a 70-mile-per-hour speed limit.
Okay.
So coming out of Chicago and then getting into Indianapolis, it's, 55 miles per hour. But the bulk of the drive is done at 70 miles per hour. This, when I had it charged at 100% on day one, said that I had 310 miles of range. And I was like, oh, I could totally do this. And you know what? I did. I managed to get to Indianapolis without stopping in the dreaded Lafayette Walmart parking lot. And I still had like 70 miles of range left, 30% of my battery life left by the time I got there. Now, keep in mind, it was between 60 and 70 degrees.
Well, that's a battery sweet spot.
Sweet spot of temperature.
Sweet spot. I don't know what that is.
I don't know, but I don't think you can say it on air. I'm sure that's a swear word. It was comfortable. It had seat. So I was driving the top tier GT line, which is $78,000, but it had seat massagers and all of the things. And here's the even better thing. So when I've taken vehicles to charging stations to charge, I feel like I'm there for hours and it takes forever just to get it to 80%. But with this, I made sure to set the destination as the charger, which means the battery preconditioned so that mm-hmm it's optimal to accept the charge. Then when I got there, so first in Indianapolis, I went to an Electrify America at a Myers and plugged in. It took 53 minutes to get to 100%. And that's even with the trickle charge between 80% and 100%. And I did my grocery shopping while I was there, went back. And then this morning, I went to, had 30% battery life on the vehicle, went to Electrify America, Bank of America in Logan Square. and it took 47 minutes. I was actually hoping it would take longer. I have book club this evening, and I have not finished the book. So I was trying to read the book, but 47 minutes to get from 30% to 100%.
To 100%.
And
not 80.
Not 80, 100%. Yeah. And the phenomenal thing was, I was at 150 kilowatt chargers both times, and I was actually getting 150 kilowatts.
Well, that's great.
I've never had that happen.
I've never had that. No, the fastest I've ever
both
seen
times.
Is 80. And then Electrify America looked into it, and they said, well, you briefly hit 130. I'm like, well, I wasn't watching during that brief moment.
Yeah, and that brief moment doesn't count.
No, it
doesn't. It's the average. But I stayed at 150 the entire time this morning. Wow. I was so impressed.
Well, that's cool. Guess what we did?
We talked about a lot of stuff.
Yeah, we ran out of time here. Good show. Andrew Collins of The Drive, thank you for joining us today. Thank you, Jill.
Yes.
Thank you to producer Randy and the good folks here at TalkZone. Let us talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.